Now, in his book called Bringing Back the Beaver, Derek Gow tells of his magnificent struggle to reintroduce a species crucial to the health of our ecosystems. He's here to tell us more. Welcome to the show, Derek.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. And yourself?
Very well indeed, thank you. On a nice sunny day in Devon.
Oh, you know what? I'm in Spain and it is throwing it down. So that's karma, isn't it? We've switched roles for today.
Yeah.
Now, tell me, you're a farmer termed ecologist, I believe.
Well, yes. I mean, I've always had a huge personal interest in nature conservation. And I worked in nature conservation at the beginning of my career, and then I worked for probably about 10 years to develop a farm we had here, which is about 300 acres of pasture in central Devon, keeping, you know, about 1,500 breeding sheep and about 120 beef cows. And now we've just finished that and are working hard to create a landscape that has no purpose other than to give nature living space in its very many forms. So that means digging many pools on the farm, lowering the grazing number of animals, you know, opening up woodlands, sowing wildflowers, planting trees, and looking at what species we can reintroduce here to create, as I say, one large area where nature production is the primary purpose.
A great idea. So it's not just about beavers then, it's all wildlife.
It's all wildlife. I'm sitting here at the window of my little office watching some marsh tits on a feeder and long-tailed tits, you know, basically moving between bushes and collecting spider webs to make extra springy nests for their offspring when the weather warms. So, yeah, it's about creating space where all life can prosper.
And I know that you have been successful as far as beavers are concerned because you assisted in the re-establishment of beavers in waterways across England and Scotland.
Well, I've worked with beavers for over a quarter of a century now. I've been involved in the import of the animals for the initial beaver reintroduction trials in both England and Scotland, and now we have beavers which have escaped from some of the large holding pens that we keep them in on the farm and have been living wild on the farm for the last 10 years. So in the valley bottoms where the willow is, there are very many dams, very many pools, you know, very many impoundments and old medieval drainage systems, all of them created by the beaver, all of them holding water and all of them providing space and a food supply for species like common otters and kingfishers and moorhens and ducks, which would otherwise have no living opportunity at all.
Right. And that's why it's so important, is it, Derek?
Well, the beavers are nature's water gardeners. Well, what they do is especially in the smaller upper headwaters of streams, as they move up from big river systems where it's an easy living, where you can float up and down and eat reeds and grasses. They move up from these river systems because they're territorial animals. They live in family units, and one family unit won't tolerate beavers from another family unit living in its space. So when the big rivers are full, the animals move up into the smaller stream systems, and to create a location of safety for themselves, because they're, you know, big round tubby animals like kind of gigantic hamsters, which though they've got a kind of fairly significant bite, have no real protection against some of their old predators like wolves or bears or big cats. So what they have to do to create a safe living environment where they can swim to obtain the plants they require or the timber trees in winter is they build an initial pool and then many more pools around it. The water in the small stream backs up to create sometimes really substantial you know, areas of open water, and the beavers can then travel through these with ease and simplicity and great safety to access both the food and the required to maintain a territory and to keep themselves safe.
So can they help with flooding then?
Yeah, they have the wetlands that beavers create generally are complicated, and very many scientific studies have shown that they do have a significant effect on water retention. And what that means is that when you have, you know, heavy rain and a human-created landscape where all the water's been drained and moved to the edge of the fields, is that when the rain comes and it falls and cloud bursts, then it all runs off the surface of the land straight into the ditches and streams and then straight down into the main channels. And then it basically floods towns, villages, settlements, infrastructure. And as the climate warms and becomes less predictable, then this is becoming more and more of a problem for our villages and communities right the way through. But it's a worldwide problem now. It's not just a British problem. And what beaver dam complexes and upper catchments do is that when it rains and the water comes down through the sides of the fields and flows into their dams, it's like filling up a series of cups. As one fills up, another one fills in sequence. And the water, beaver-generated wetlands can store something like 10 times the volume of water that a channel would otherwise store, because they have lots of complications in them, like felled trees and aquatic vegetation and a deep leaf litter of mosses and decaying vegetation, which acts as a big sponge. All these things in collaboration create a slowing effect. They absorb water, they slow water, and it breaks on average a flood peak by between 5 to 8%. And of course, if you have many beavers, that feature of their landscapes is increased, and this can have a significant effect on what happens downstream for people. Yeah. So they're very important animals as far as slowing the flow is concerned.
Yeah, as well as being very cute.
They have their moments. Baby beavers cry like children and are simply adorable. If you look at the people that worked with them in the past, they became very, very fond of the tame animals they worked with.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm trying to think of what are the water animals. Presumably the water vole is important as well.
Yeah, well, water voles, of course, this kind of like wonderful little character of Ratty in Kenneth Graham's book Wind in the Willows, who used to love to scull up and down rivers like the Windrush or the Thames, smoking his pipe with his fore and aft hat on, while drinking brandy with his pal the mole. And water voles, of course, in Britain have suffered the most disastrous of collapses. I mean, they were once a common animal, they were once found everywhere. But over the course of the last 100 years, it's reckoned now that they've lost some of 97% of the British range. It's currently estimated that perhaps only 130,000 of this once abundant little creature now survive. And they've really disappeared from the landscape because, of course, we've drained the open sunny wetlands that they require. We've ensured that there aren't huge beds of reed and iris in great abundance. And where we've also walked away from watercourses, you know, the ones that we've canalised and straightened to run along the edges of fields, then we've allowed the trees to grow up. The trees that we once used for clogs or for cartwheels or for gunpowder or whatever else, we don't use anymore. And if you let the trees come up, then they shade out what vegetation is left. So this tiny creature is in a very difficult situation. And beavers, by moving back into heavily treed environments, by recreating ponds and pools and canals and open sunny wetlands, create ideal living space for water voles.
Great stuff. It's such a shame we're losing a lot of our greenery nowadays. Are any of these creatures in danger of becoming extinct, or are there plenty of them about?
Well, water voles are almost certainly going to become extinct if we don't act now. I've been having involved in conversations with Natural England, which is the government's statutory nature conservation body, over the course of the last few weeks about what should now be done. And under the terms of the incoming Environment Bill, it looks as if there's a very clear will now to look at what we have done in the past to conserve water voles, to develop a knowledge of what's worked, and then to act based on that knowledge rather than sitting on our hands and talking about it for very much longer. But when you look at other creatures that inhabit the wetlands that beavers generate, you know, the reality of our use of the land is that it's been so intensive that very many species, you know, are in great trouble now. I mean, if you look at things like the farmland bird figures, you know, it's telling you that things like yellowhammers or skylarks have fallen by tens of millions, you know, over the course of the last few decades. So when it comes to the landscapes that the beavers generate, you know, it's not just about voles or birds. It's looking at things like water beetles and frogs, because, you know, one of the recent studies of one of the beaver wetlands near here shows that in the landscape above them, there are 10 species of beetles. In the landscape below the beaver wetland, there are another 10. And in the beaver-generated wetland, there are 40 different species of beetles. And all this is food for other things. So if you don't have food and you don't have cover, then there's a wild creature of any sort trying to exist in these modern, modernised, increasingly formidable landscapes. You're in a very difficult place indeed.
Yeah, there's so much wildlife and nature about us that we don't know about, you know, underfoot, above us. It really is incredible.
Yes, it is. But, you know, again, what we find is that, you know, people, when they drive through landscapes and they see the countryside that surrounds us, they kind of accept it's normal, that the straight things called hedges are have always been there, going round things that are all called fields, and the fields are where the sheep live, and this is all somehow nature. And of course, it couldn't be further from the truth. What you're looking at is, you know, this kind of great big green industrial landscape, and though it may look kind of appealing, it's not really a great landscape for very many other things to live in. So if you look at Britain as a tiny island, you know, we cut down the forest really starting in the Bronze Age, and every big animal that used to live here, the wolves and the bears and the elk, have all gone. And increasingly, in more modern times, indeed within my lifetime, when I was a kid living in the Scottish borders, things like lapwings and curlews, you know, these wonderful calling birds were the birds of spring. And when I sit here and look out the window of my office, there's not a lapwing within, you know, maybe 40 miles of here. In the whole of the southwest on Bodmin, there's maybe about, you know, there's a handful of breeding pairs, and the lots of the big artificial landscape we've created to farm and to produce the food that we think in part we need has come at a devastating price for wildlife. And that's why we're trying to look at our farm here now to say, well, you know, actually it's going to have a different purpose.
Yeah, very, very sad. Is there anything we can do, anything our listeners can do to help the situation?
Well, I think there is. I mean, there are some good organisations out there, you know, such as the Roy Dennis Foundation for Wildlife Conservation, and alongside the big organisations like the RSPB and Wildlife Trust, who are trying to do some good things. But I like the small guys that talk and don't do. So Roy's Foundation has been the organisation that has reintroduced white-tailed eagles to the Isle of Wight, a bird that was hunted to extinction for really pretty much superstitious reasons about 100 years ago. And though there are not very many eagles on the island yet, they're starting to move right the way through Britain. And last night I got a note from one of his chaps, a guy called Dr. Tim McCrill, to say there's a white-tailed eagle from the Isle of Wight sitting in a woodland on the other side of our farm. Now, I did not see that bird, but it doesn't have to be this way. There are some really good people trying very hard to change things. And as far as your listeners are concerned, the best thing to do if you're interested in nature conservation is read up on these organisations. Look at the ones that are doing real good, which is quite commonly the small organisations, you know, who don't have big budgets and offices and funding, and support them if you can.
Yeah, I've just pulled that up actually, Derek. It's the Roy Dennis, it's all the W's, roydennis.org, if any of our listeners want to have a look. And do you have a website as well?
We do. We have formed a small charitable trust called the Keep It Wild Trust. And with that tiny trust, we are aiming to start to buy areas of old species-rich habitat, tiny meadows, for example, you know, where there are still significant banks of old plants like yellow flag iris blooming gold in the summer months, or areas where little creatures survive. And if anybody's interested in our work, if you look at the Keep It Wild Trust, then you know, we aim to make this bigger and stronger as we can. We also have a wildlife photography site, and we have a camping site here where people could come to see what we're doing to rewild our farm, and you can find that if you look at Coombs Head Rewilding, you'll find a camping site there.
Coombs Head. Brilliant. Well, you've had some good write-ups. I was reading that the BBC Wildlife magazine said Gow has a fire in his belly. We need more people like him. And Dame Judy Gench said it's wonderful to see that beavers are now officially back on the list of native species, having been absent for so long, far too long. Brilliant, brilliant. Your book for our listeners is called Bringing Back the Beaver, the story of one man's quest to rewild Britain's waterways. It is out now and it is by Derek Gow, who we're speaking to. Derek, it's wonderful to chat to you. Enjoy the sunshine. I'm hoping we get some soon.
I will do. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.